Additional $2 pick six with a 70-30 split. This summer, exciting daytime thoroughbred racing is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 7-8 minutes into hour three, and the Friday before the halfway point of the year, and before we really in earnest start turning attention to Saratoga and Del Mar and Ellis Park, and of course the quarter horse racing at Sam Houston.
That is undoubtedly the highlight of what's going on, especially over the course of the next 10 evenings, beginning with tonight's card. Good morning.
Good morning. I couldn't resist. That was right.
Not only quarter horses too. Don't shortchange me. There was an Arabian race last night to kick things off. So,
well, if you're doing that, then there better be some paints. Any paints?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's usually one paint race every, not quite every card, but at least every other card. It usually goes
Minute Maid orange juice and few other beverages that Coke Foods owned, and I think Snow Crop was their product too, and they flew me down to Houston, and and I walked, I can't remember if I went to Intercontinental or Hobby, but all I remember is sliding glass doors opening and feeling like a blast furnace had just hit me in the face, and I said, well, I won't be coming here to work, because that is not the I'm a cold weather preference to hot weather for me, at least at that time in my life. I could not see moving down there for anything.
Yeah, the only place that's similar is you know, when you walk out of the Fort Lauderdale airport, I feel like, because the Miami airport, when you walk out, it's down below everything. When you walk out of the Fort Lauderdale airport, you get the same feeling. You get that just that blast of hot air as you exit, and it is similar to the feeling here. There was a group at Sam Houston last night in the suite next to where the announcer's booth is, and so I was walking down to get coffee, and the air conditioning was blowing so hard inside their suite that their window was all fogged up. Because, of course, it was so sticky outside, and that's just very, very, very common for us this time of year. And I remember, I think it was maybe 3 years ago or so, it was very hot. It could have been more than that. It was very hot at the beginning of the Saratoga meet. And I was talking to our friend Andy Serling, and he said, when I walk outside, my glasses fogged up. That's how hot it was. And I said, yeah, that happens here generally from April through October.
Exactly.
Terribly surprising there. But, yeah. So, but no, what doesn't affect the quarter horses too bad. Luckily, we run at night here. I don't know how they do it at Lone Star at 2:35 every day, but they're a tough brand up there in North Texas.
I guess so. Well, let's take a look, Nick, at this cross country. Last one before the summer break, and it's an all stakes version. Last week again proved, too tough to tame, like Darlington. And let's see if we can't get through this. And I suppose, you know what, at some degree, we should maybe talk the Foster, because the question, let's do that. Let's talk about whether Maxfield is, in fact, a solitary A that we could lean on to make this thing into a pick four.
Yeah, and I think the best approach with Maxfield is to do that. It's just be aggressive and assume that he's better than these horses, because, I mean, on paper, he really is. He looks like a complete layover. He looks like 4-5 might be value. Based on the Ali Sheba, I had been kind of a Maxfield detractor, I would say, to an extent, because I felt like he was very overrated, beating up on very weak horses at Fairgrounds. And, everybody was sort of seduced by the word undefeated is just so overused now. Even when you're using it on a horse that is undefeated, it's a label that people really seek out that really means very little, given that it has no context. So I felt like Maxfield took a big step forward in the Ali Sheba, and he might just be a little bit better horse at Churchill than he is anywhere else. It wouldn't be all that surprising. So I think he has this field over a barrel. I don't see him really having much trouble. Obviously, there should be a little bit of pace. If Warrior's Charge can get out of the gate in one piece, which did not happen, obviously, down at Lone Star, he looks to be the pace, but it feels like Maxfield will always have him in his sights, and he's a much better horse than Warrior's Charge. So I think it'd be awfully surprising for things to go any other direction. And I think he's one definitely to lean on.
Very good. All right. So that sets us up to look at the other four races essentially as a pick four, and it starts with the Bashford. So let's go there.
Yeah, and this is it starts with the Bashford Manor, which, looks like a very competitive race, which, a lot of times these early season two-year-old races are not, they're not quite as competitive. Sometimes you'll get one or two horses that really ran significantly faster than everybody else. And that's not the case, at least based on buyer speed figures. Everybody's sort of in the same range, roughly around 60. In years past, I would scoff at horses that Todd Pletcher ran at Monmouth or in other jurisdictions and brought to New York, but that's what he did with Double Thunder. And this is a horse that looks like he's relatively solid. He sat on top of a slow pace and pulled clear to win that day, but looks to have some talent. So does Glacial for Norm Cassie, who's quietly had a very, very good Churchill meet, looks to have some really talented two-year-olds as well. And this is a horse that they paid serious money for, a Frost at $140,000 after working sharply at the March sale. And came out and delivered. Didn't really get much support that day at the windows, but pulled clear late to win at 7-1. I believe Norm has four wins with two-year-olds at the Churchill meet, which is just very, very solid. And I thought this horse overcame some adversity coming out of the gate. I think he's clearly the one to beat, and I think that given all that happened in that race, I'm not overly concerned with him having to come from a little bit off of it. I think the same can be said for Vodka and Water. I also thought Lansdowne was an impressive debut winner. So I think you're going to have to go deep here. I mean, I'm going to use every bit of the 1, 2, 4, 8, and 9 just as A's, because I think you're going to be able to narrow it down a little bit in the other two Churchill legs, including the Foster. And this one just looks pretty wide open to me.
All right, so 1, 2, 4, 8, 9 to start in the Bashford. And let's then go to Thistle Down and talk about that group in the Ohio Derby, and I thought this was not easy.
No, it really wasn't. I think there are a couple of things going on. Obviously, I don't know where Mask Parade's last race came from, But if it is duplicated, he's going to be very, very tough. I mean, that was a, hey, I'm a fringe Derby player type of effort, just powering clear of that field. And I know it wasn't a particularly robust bunch, and they've not necessarily come back and run all that great since Southern Passage came back and basically validated the speed figure before running fourth in the Matt win. But regular guy came back and kind of dropped 12 points. So that being said, I mean, it's almost irrelevant to me given the way Masked Parade ran. It just seems like a stretch to expect him to run like that again. This is a tougher field from top to bottom. There are some real horses in here, and there are some Derby competitors and Derby types that are getting Lasix now because we're past that stage and they can be treated with it in Ohio. So, I mean, King Fury is a horse that's going to get a lot of support, and deservedly so. He was an impressive winner of the Lexington, granted with a huge pace setup that day, but ran what I thought was an impressive race, and Kenny McPeak was willing to run him in the Kentucky Derby off of that race. I'm surprised when he didn't make the Derby that McPeak didn't reroute him to Ascot or something like that, given the way he's campaigned his horses in the past. But all kidding aside, I mean, he lands here in what looks like a very realistic spot. Promise Keeper won a historically weak running of the Peter Pan, but did so in, you know, solid fashion. Looks to be a pretty obvious horse in here. I think one that you're definitely going to want to use. Hozier is now in Rudolph Brissett's care. He's a bad horse and lost to a particularly bad horse last time in the Sir Barton. I don't see how I could use him. He's going to be a bit of a price, but I thought this was another where you're going to be relatively deep. I mean, I'm going to use the 1-4. I thought the Reds was a little bit interesting coming in from the Pennine Ridge. I thought he ran a winning race in the Tessio 2 back. It was a bit of a questionable DQ, but he, you know, certainly put himself in position, has the right kind of running style. Keep Me in Mind is going to come from way out of it. The blinkers are going back on. I don't think he was a good horse with blinkers, so I'm skeptical. It looks to me like Proxy is done as well, so I mean, I'm going to mainly focus on the 1, 4, and 10. I'll use 7, 8, and 9 in some capacity as backups, but I think Promise Keeper and Masked Parade will have the right kind of trips pace wise, and if things heat up, King Fury will be in position.
So 1, 4, and 10 as your principles. All right. Let's take a look in New York, and before we talk New York, meaning the race that is in the sequence, which is the Wild Applause, the 9th, a quick thought about the Mother Goose?
Yeah, it's, you know, I remember going to Belmont with my dad 21 years ago, and we watched Secret Status win the Mother Goose, and this is not my father's Mother Goose, I will say, but it's a race where always Karina looks like she's in position to wire this field. I don't really know if she's any good. I think she's good enough to win this race. Whether she's good enough to compete with Malathot or potentially even her stablemate Search Results, I don't know. She sat on a very solid, very strong inside last time, powered clear, set a slow pace. You know, I hope that they try and create a little separation. Pratt's a very good front-end rider, so I would imagine he will. Clairiere's the only other horse I could see winning. Iligami does look like she's moving forward a little bit, but this is just a vastly different group of horses than she's faced last time. Both Clairiere and Always Karina are a lot better than what she's been facing. So I'm expecting it to be pretty dull and Always Karina to wire the field.
Okay. Interesting. This is another place where Rusty Arnold turns up, and that filly's okay.
Yeah, she's not bad. I mean, it was Iligami is going to benefit, obviously, if somebody pushes Always Karina. I guess, you know, you can maybe hope that the problem is Make Mischief and Zagel are the other horses in this race with speed, and I don't think two riders in New York take their horses back on a higher percentage basis than Eric Cancel and Joel Rosario. So it's going to be very hard to expect either of those two horses to be forwardly placed. Make Mischief maybe might be ridden for a little bit of speed to make it harder for Always Karina to clear, but I think the pace is going to be very much in Always Karina's favor, and I think Pratt's very good on the front end, so it's going to be looks relatively boring to me. I'm expecting it to be kind of an Always Karina wire job, and we'll see where she lands next. I would imagine if this goes well, they'll look potentially at the Alabama and see her, let her take on some of the heavies in the division.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's talk about the Wild Applause. These are three-year-old fillies going a mile on the grass, and you got some horses that are going in the right way, and some that are still kind of underexposed. How wide we got to go here?
I'll tell you, this is an interesting race. I think you probably have to use, I'm going to use three. And Minone for Chad Brown was very impressive in her North American debut.
Yes.
She came from well off the pace. It was a slow pace, and she just obliterated that field. Now, you look through that field, there wasn't much in there. It was not a particularly tough race. She kind of did what was expected, being even money off of sort of, you know, modest European form, even though she was a Group 3 winner. The mile's the question. There's not really anything in her pedigree that would indicate a mile should be a problem. Obviously, Chad Brown's a guy you would really trust in this kind of scenario, so I don't think it'll be an issue. She's probably not going to get a ton of pace to run out in here and might actually end up finding herself as the horse that's tasked with setting the pace. I think that'd be great. So I think the easiest way to get around there when you're trying to get more distance, contrary to what a lot of modern trainers seem to think, is to go to the lead. So I'm kind of hopeful that she's ridden for a little bit of pace out of the gate. Lovestruck was a very impressive winner on debut and then on closing day at Saratoga, and then came back and won the Tepin over Invincible Gal, who, of course, is stakes place now, graded stakes place, as a three-year-old herself. So I think you have to use Minone, you have to use Lovestruck. And I was very impressed with the race Bye-Bye ran last time. I did not think that Bye-Bye could be competitive in the Soaring Softly. David Aragona picked her, and she ran very well. Now catch Rosario with Cancel riding a Bubbles on Ice. So I'm going to use those three, the 2, 3, and 7, who look to me like one of those three will win it. I know Alda won the Hilltop last time. She got a great ride and a tremendous pace setup. She is probably a cut below some of these, I think, as she steps up a tad in class. I know they're both $100,000 stakes races. This looks more like one that could have a grade next to it.
That, you know, that Bye-Bye stands to, you know, to, I think, to be the pace, and you know, if Franco can meet her out there, you know, off the dog leg. If there was a little bit more, if there was more lick in here, and they're just, I guess they're, I'm just looking up and down. I there really isn't. This horse of Larry Goichman's, the homebred, the Flincher filly, I think, you know, this might be aggressive and a lot to ask in a third career start, but I think Runaway Rumor is okay.
Well, I you know, I was impressed with the race she ran on debut. She beat a terrible field, but she did it in you know, about as impressive a fashion as you can, coming from last after breaking somewhat slowly, with no pace whatsoever. And I mean, the field she beat was weak, but it was really more of a how the race was run type of situation. And then she was very game last time, coming from well off of it to get the job done over Spongy. This is a big jump in class, no doubt about it. I mean, there's a difference between even the listed type stakes horses and New York bred one other than. So she's going to have to elevate her game, but she's a horse with talent. There's no question about it in my mind. And I think there are definitely some opportunities, at least amongst New York breds, for her down the line. You could see her becoming one of the real players in that division, but I think she deserves an opportunity against open company. There's no doubt also that she looks good on the sheets for sure. I mean, she's been wide, very, very wide in both prior starts, and has that sort of relentless late run. So I could see including her at least as a backup. If you feel a little more strongly, then get her in that A line, because she's going to be a price.
Yeah, exactly. And back to Churchill for the Wise Dan, which, if we're all singling Maxfield, then technically, I mean, the Wise Dan might be considered, you know, as the anchor leg for our purposes. And this is a good group.
It is a good group, and there's real competition in here for Set Piece. Set Piece was very impressive in winning the overnight stake last time, back on that stake-laden card at Churchill. He won going away. He's now won impressively two in a row. And he's a horse with talent. Brad Cox has also campaigned him in it in about as unaggressive a fashion as you could. But Brad Cox also likes to win races. So he's somebody who banks a lot on high percentages. And Set Piece has been in races where he's been very heavily backed. And this should be another one. Although, you know, there are horses in here that are actually a lot better than their recent running lines look. And to me, the one that really qualifies under in that category is Field Pass. Because Field Pass ran very, very well in the Maker's Mark Mile and then came back in the Man of War. And, you know, that was a race where people like me thought he was going to get the lead. and that this was going to be kind of an opportunity for Luis Saez to dictate the pace to everybody else, which he's so good at. And it ended up that that he couldn't get the lead from Channel Cat and tired late going a mile and 3/8. I actually like him quite a bit on the cutback, and I think he's very dangerous going now a mile and 1/16, which is probably a little bit better for him. The assumption also when horses like this run in races like that is that, oh, well, Mike Maker's just better with everybody as he stretches them out, and that's also not completely true. So I think Field Pass is very dangerous. I'm going to use him. I'm going to use Set Piece as well. Some like it Hot Brown. The other Mike Maker trainee is coming in off a win in the Dinner Party. He's another one that had some running lines that were better than they looked, given the way he had been involved in some hot paces. The lead really looks like his for the taking here. I don't imagine anybody's going to go too wild trying to keep him from getting to the front. So I would imagine that he's a horse that you'd probably want to use. So it's going to be the two Makers and Cox for me with the 1, 3, and 8. And hopefully we'll get – this is a ticket, obviously, you're going to punch a few times, and we'll hope for the best price in the Bashford Manor and Maxfield, of course, to get the job done, maybe the best of our prices in the Wild Applause, because it looks like a race – it looks like a sequence that you can lean on Maxfield and then hope that you're right just a couple other times.
Well, and to run it down, starting with the Bashford Manor, 1, 2, 4, 8, 9 with the 1, 4, 10 in the Ohio Derby, the 2, 3, 7 in the Wild Applause, and the 1, 3, 8 in the Wise Dan. And Maxfield is the 8 in the Foster. Well, hopefully, this fosters this wise opinion fosters Wild Applause when we get to the end.
Yes, we will hope so, because you're a wordsmith and a poet, but you also know it.
That just sort of grabbed me by the lapels, although I'm not wearing something with lapels. Nick,
Now we've seen the NHC tracks announced today. Are you going to the NHC?
Of course.
You're being dragged out of Saratoga for the NHC. That is commitment.
Well, not only am I going for the NHC, I'm going to Del Mar before it.
I wondered. Yeah, I thought about that the other day. You mentioned to me that you might try and parlay the two together. And this is a first. This is the first time Del Mar for you in the summer?
Yes. I've only ever been there when there was nothing happening. And then I was there with the Breeders' Cup. And so this is the first. And it just so happens we'll be there for Pacific Classic weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I guess Del Mar in November. I've been to Del Mar in November once. Del Mar in November would probably be like running a Saratoga meet in like April. It's just not, there's no vibe. There's no, none of what makes Del Mar Del Mar exists in November. So, I mean, you've only been to Del Mar, in my opinion, when you've gone in the summer. So, and you're going to get the best of it in terms of racing too. So that'll be a great trip. And the tracks were announced today, so that's something to look forward to. And man, 2 weeks of Steve Bick out of Saratoga during the 40-day stint, that's doesn't happen very often.
Well, we've also got a problem because I realized last night, when Tina said to me, are we going to Monmouth? And I quickly said yes, and then I said, wait a minute, let me look.
It's opening weekend, right?
It's opening weekend. Like, you got to be kidding. I don't know. I think this happened 2 years ago, and what I did was, that was the crazy, with the 180 degree. Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah.
I think what we did 2 years ago was we went to opening day, and then after opening day, we drove down to Oceanport and did the show Friday, the Haskell Eve show Friday, and then then Haskell Day, and of course actually Haskell Day ended up so crazy we ended up at the beach all day because the race didn't go off until what time, it was like 7 o'clock, so it was kind of funny. And we'll see about that, but then I got to be back on Sunday because we got television with Seth, and I've already been replaced by that Lenny Shulman's going to sit in for a couple of weeks while I'm away. So,
Yeah, that's hefty. I mean, it's been years now since the Haskell was run. I don't know, it's been in and out. I mean, the Haskell was run on opening weekend, but that was back when opening day was a Wednesday. I mean, I remember my first Saratoga trip was in 2009, and opening day was, I want to say, Wednesday, the 29th of July, because I think it was Bill Mott's birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we went down for the Haskell on, we left Sunday morning, and Rachel Alexander won the Haskell. That was my first Saratoga trip, and so, yeah, it'll be an action-packed calendar. That's there's a lot going on those last 3 weekends in July, and it's right around the corner. I mean, here on out, there's something every week. The Suburban is next week, and that's actually shaping up as a really nice race with Mystic Guide and Happy Saver, potentially Country Grammar, and then the following week is Stars and Stripes, and the following week is Saratoga. So, ready or not, here we go.
Well, and I haven't even included that I'm being recruited by Judge Coker, Bill Coker, out in Rochester, is recruiting me to come out and broadcast from Finger Lakes on New York Derby Day, which is a Monday.
That's so, a tough thing to pass up. Now that we're all able to congregate again, everybody's like, hey, come on, let's do this, let's do that, come on, let's all get together. And I think we all thought that seeing 100% attendance at different things, we all thought we were probably, you know, 3 to 4 years away from that happening again, but it is awfully nice, and it's good that things have started to trend this direction. The pandemic was rough enough.
Well, we may have to go out. The last time I was out there, Gary won it with Hit It Once More, and drove out. Actually, had a really fun day.
So, the 101 Spire speed figure that was a time by yours truly.
That's right. And in fact, Gary's going out. He's got that horse of Eddie of Eddie's.
Chowda.
Chowda's running in the. Yeah. Yep, and he's going to run in the New York Derby. And he should, you know, the stretch out for him should really work. And in fact, Eddie yesterday and Gary's 990, right? 900 and Jasmine-esque. In fact, I think you picked Jasmine-esque, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Jasmine-esque was a very good, Jasmine-esque is a better horse than people realize. And she'd also been horribly disadvantaged by slow paces in her last couple of races. So it was, it was a good spot and a very, very nice price.
A couple of quick notes, actually. A hammer standing by, but this has now triggered a few things. You talked about the NHC. Del Mar, Ellis Park, Golden Gate, Gulfstream, Monmouth, Saratoga, and Woodbine will be the 7 tracks used for NHC when we get to Bally's in August. And then you mentioned this, and it triggered Eddie F. And, of course, Eddie F.'s for seafood, lobster rolls, and whole belly clams, and you bet, you know, right in Saratoga. Their win yesterday, Gary now at 994 wins, so he's 6 away from 1,000. Eddie Keneally, he's magically delicious. He's sitting at 999. So Keneally, very well. I think he's got two or three in today. So Eddie's going to hit his 1,000th win as early. Yeah, he's got 3 in today. He's in the 4th, 5th, and the 11th. Unfortunately, he's not in the Kelly's Landing. That would have been great.
Best horse he trained, probably.
That would have been great if he had had a... It is actually one of 2 millionaires that... and Eddie's had 3 Grade 1 winners. Name the other two.
Bushfire. And
Bang.
That ridiculous one that won the Ashland a couple of years ago. I keep wanting to say Out for a Spin, but that was the Dallas Stewart one that won.
No, well,
Sailor's Valentine?
Well, no, Sailor's Valentine. Actually, you know what? Sailor's that I think she is a great. That, now that you say that,
she
I think
is.
She
won
did
the
win.
Ashland, yeah.
That's yes. Look at you. So he's got 4 Grade 1 winners because he had a Foster winner, Braidster.
Oh, Braidster. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, so ironically, Braidster is named for the owner, Joe Sutton's grandson. Joe Sutton always sits in the second row at Astros games, right behind home plate. Joe Sutton's daughter taught at the school that I went to.
How funny! And but he's actually he's got a fifth.
Named Brady.
That's great. He's got a 5th Grade 1 winner. Abscond won the Natalma.
Oh, Canadian Grade 1. Exactly. There you go.
That's worth 70% of an American
Abscond
Grade 1.
Around the barn and tells her friends that she won a Grade 1. but nobody else in the barn tells anybody that they're Big Mix with grade one winner.
So ridiculous. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam, 1215. Nick, thanks for a great first half of the year. We'll talk in 2 weeks.
Sounds great, my friend. Good luck. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro. The frivolity never ends. Rick Hammerly standing by.
Hey, Dave. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I could sense the excitement in your voice as well.
Why would that be? Why? Because I actually get 6 days off.
Exactly. And you know what? I tell you, I think a lot of people should follow you. It's a good time to take a break in racing. You know, Churchill's ending. We're getting ready for Del Mar and Saratoga. You know, maybe it's time to puff up the bankroll a little bit, take the family out for a little road trip for 10 days or so, a week, and come back fresh with like you and get ready for the second half of the year. It's a good time to take a break.
We've been doing this. This has always been, whenever Tina's done with school, it seems to coordinate perfectly. So, and the same, of course, is true at Christmas time. She, you know, it's funny. We were just talking about the trip to Del Mar in August, Pacific Classic Week, and then we'll move over to Vegas. And she's going to stay like, I don't know, 2-3 nights in Vegas before she goes home. There's no need for her to hang around while I'm, you know, while I'm broadcasting the NHC. And so she says to me, she started watching this. It's pretty entertaining show about vacation villas, vacation places, and they do a budget one, they do a luxury one, and they do a unique one. It's three fairly young kids, two girls and a guy, and it's quite fun. We've seen they did one boats and floats, and they did one, I don't know, tree houses or whatever. Anyway, they were out in Wyoming or at some state park, and they were in this really cool Mercedes mini. It's like a big minivan, small RV. It's not as big as an RV, but it's not as small as a van. Have you seen these?
They're like the Amazon delivery trucks. Exactly.
Yeah.
A little bit bigger than a surfer van, but not quite an RV. I got you. They're kind of tall and slim. Yeah,
it's called a Sprinter. Maybe it's a Mercedes. Whatever. It's got a cute little name. It's really cool, and it's got.
Are
little...
you telling me you're going to drive that out to California when you?
No. But she, for the first time ever, she's acknowledged that she'd be interested in some sort of a RV experience, which I've been pushing for a long time. And so now she's interested. So she says to me, you know, we're already going to be out in California. Why don't we do that for like, you know, and I looked it up. You actually have to do it for seven. The rentals are 7 days. They operate in the Western states, like in 10 Western states. You have to take it for 7 days minimum. But with that particular thing, the Sprinter or whatever the hell it's called, so I said, Tina, I said, I'm glad that you're looking forward to the vacation. I'm going to be working. I have a radio show to do. It's the middle of the prime Pacific Classic Week and then the NHC, but also Travers Week. And she's ready, you know, do something like out of City Slickers where you know, we're going to be, we're going to be looking for Curly's one thing. It's crazy.
Well, look, you can. How many places have I done the show from across the? How many national parks and places on the road? If I can do it, you can do it. I mean, believe me, there's nothing like it. Getting in something like that and hitting the road. I got plenty of itineraries for you. You want to do, you know, national parks in Utah, Wyoming,
yeah.
Colorado.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you'd have a blast and. You could find some local station and set it up and go in and do your 3-hour show from there at some local station somewhere and get back in the van and hit the road. So it's 2021. You don't have to be home. You can do it from the road. So I'm with Tina. Do it.
All right, we may have to carve out. So I'm gonna have to. There may be Casey. There may be a 2 week vacation in the next year or two.
You know what's funny is I have two Ted Nicholson and Mike Lakow. They're both in Wyoming right now. So of course I get the calls. Wow. Where do I go? What do I do? And so they're, hopefully getting ready to do some rafting down the Snake River and hitting a little Yellowstone and seeing some buffalo. And, there's nothing like it. I mean, out here in the West, we see those things a lot. But when you come from, east of the Mississippi, it's a little different world out here. But and you just get addicted to just being out in the wilderness and seeing different things. But anyway, glad you're coming. To the Real Del Mar in August, start shopping for sunglasses and a pair of shorts. Do not show up in a coat and tie. Well, we'll go through the dress code when you get here. But anyway, I'm glad you're coming for that. You'll enjoy it.
No, looking forward
to
it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But it's funny, I heard you was cooking breakfast and I heard you talking to Marty and mentioning those three claims out of those 2-year-old race, $300,000 claims in the same race, and same owner, same trainer. And interestingly enough, I got a phone call that afternoon from one of the parties who had a horse claim, and was asking me, "Is that legal? We just got a horse claim, three of them, same person, And I said, "Well, let me just tell you, if they allowed it, I'm sure it's legal. I'm sure they didn't just decide that day to turn on the rules. I don't know the rules." In Kentucky, which is another one of our crazy things that we were trying to get straightened out. So just take that crazy rule. So they're allowed. I called up someone who worked there, and I said, "What's the rules in Kentucky? You're allowed to take three horses per race, an owner and a trainer. California, a trainer can drop two claims for the same horse. You can take more than one horse in the race. And Arkansas, you can only win one per race, per owner and trainer, so they're all different." But, they were a little worried that if it was legal and this and that, but I've never heard of anything like that. Now, we have a lot of claims that go on volume-wise in Hot Springs, but never seen three horses for that tag go in the same race, let alone be at the same connection. So, kind of cool. And, there's something to be said about claiming a horse that's ready to roll rather than taking a shot at the sale. So
yep.
I know if I was gonna spend $100,000 with some buddies and whatever, I think I'd just as soon claim a couple high price spend and race them next week. So I get it. Why not?
No, I understood immediately the appeal and yeah, he paid a premium for some of them. It's at the same time, if you bought one, if you bred one for 40 and then you had the upkeep until it becomes a racer, that's another 30,000 or so. So figure somewhere between 50 and 70 to get a horse to the races. So to have three 2-year-olds that got experience and it cost you $300,000, yeah, you paid a little bit of a premium, but you're in business, you're in action. So I understand it too. It makes some sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. So we finally came to the end of the Santa Anita meet last weekend, and I think it was a very collective sigh just to say, okay, good, move on to Los Alamitos for, I think, 9 days of racing, three or four this week, and four this week, five next week, something like that. And they end on the 5th, and then, lo and behold, they got an 11-day break until Del Mar. And Steve Anderson wrote an article that just was, unprecedented. And it's like, finally, I've been calling for breaks out here for a long time, and as far as I'm concerned, there should be a 10-11-day break every, 3-4 months. Just to refresh everybody. But going into the Del Mar meet here, which starts on the 16th, I think similar to when Saratoga starts. But, a lot of eyes going to be on Del Mar just to see if they can you know, get it going after a little bit of a sluggish meet at Santa Anita. I did finish out well. I had some cars at the end that were playable and well, but Del Mar's going to have to step it up. They're going to, you know, most of the meet will be 4 days, which it needs to be. And some of those horses you were talking about earlier as well from Kentucky that have nowhere to go, I think you'll see a couple of those barns send some horses out to Del Mar. We'll have David Jerkin. So when you get back, and I talked to him last week, and they're excited to hopefully get some guys to come out. And like I said, I won't name them, but we'll get David on, the racing secretary there from Del Mar, when you get back, and he'll go over some of the fine points. But I think you might see 50, 60 horses from Kentucky headed to Del Mar as a different location to go just because of the circumstances. So, anytime we get horses like that at a new meet out here, it's good. So keep an eye on that. Once again, at Los Alamitos, the biggest thing going is they're the last bastion of the $2 regular pick six. So keep your eye on that. It'll start out. There will be carryovers. It'll start out, 60,000-70,000, and then that'll triple or quadruple as we go in. But the last of the last $2 regular pick six carryover. So keep an eye on that, and also be reminded that it's a meet that is for some of the smaller trainers, gives them a shot to win a pot, and actually the purses are very healthy for there. But good horses do run there and do start there. You'll see some two-year-olds from some of the bigger barns not afraid to run there because they like the surface, or maybe they train there and some of the bigger trainers have their off-site stabling there. So, it's a fun meet and a little short one here, and there's a couple more meets coming up later in the year with Del Mar, later in the meet with Los Al in between some of the other meets. But check it out. But like I said, kind of a break here heading into Del Mar, which bodes well for the racing down there. And some good cards this weekend. Yep. I mean, Churchill ends on a real big high. Excuse me, but the Thistledown, the card at Thistle came out pretty good. And you're talking about the Ohio Derby, which is great. But the race before that, the filly race, the Lady Jacqueline, I can't remember them. Well, they're putting up 250 for a filly and mare race going a mile and eighth on the dirt. I can't remember this race being here, or at least being this is as full of a race and competitive as they drew this year.
Well, let me actually address something in there, because I just checked with Todd Pletcher.
Okay.
Spice is Nice is scratching from the Lady Jacqueline in favor of the Fleur-de-Lis.
We probably figured that, staying home. Once 300 is home, I know you've got to run against a little bit tougher, but yeah, maybe if she'd have been a five horse field in Cleveland and been 2-5, she would have stayed. But this is not an easy bunch here, so take a look at that. She's starting to see in the PPs, as we've seen Crystal Ball, previously trained by Bob Baffert. There's a few of those in coming up. So she's there. She's worth a look. Jilted Bride, Steve Asmussen, who ran really big at Oaklawn. And you're noticing some of those horses that have run good at Oaklawn have really, really transferred their form to other racetracks. Brad Cox, he's got so many of these. Get Rid of What Ails You is in there. So a nice bunch in there. So, if you're looking at Horologist, Bill Mott on the rail with Joe Bravo, Traveling Joe, take a look at this race before you step in to the Ohio Derby. And the Ohio Derby, I tell you what, shades of years ago. This used to be a good prep race for the Haskell way back when. Haskell was run a little bit later in the calendar in July, but I can remember King Glorious ran here before he won the Haskell. I think Skipaway ran here. Frisk Me Now ran here. So it was a big feeder into the Haskell. I think Milwaukee Brew even ran this race, won in this race. But great rendition. I heard some of the guys going over it. What's nice is to see is some of these races that some of these horses have run in, the Peter Pan, the Arkansas Derby, the Kentucky race, the Lexington. I settled on Proxy in here. Coming back from Mike Stidham once again with Joe Bravo. It's a very tough field. I liked him a little bit. Some of the races the horses are coming off good performances in the slop. Not sure how that's going to transfer. And then you got to be intrigued by the Al Stahl horse, Mass Parade. I mean, it ran through the TV, and these teams either bust as they go on, but this just horse has the feel, especially going the mile and eighth distance, that he's going to run a big one. But very contentious race up there at Thistledown. I rarely pull those BPs, but check those out. And here's the guy's comments about the races there and at Churchill. So I know you got Pavel coming up, so we'll let you go. But enjoy the vacation. Give us a call on the way. I know I gave you a spot to check out up there in Lake Champlain. I hope you get up there. But enjoy yourself. And everybody, take a break and get ready for the second half.
Exactly. That's exactly the plan. Hammer, I appreciate it. Thanks for a great 6 months. And we'll look forward to a big summer ahead. Away they go, everybody, on your Twitter machine, Rick Hammerly. And lots of planning already in place toward Kentucky Downs. Not that far off for Hammer. And he'll be motoring east. We've got about 5-6 minutes left to close out the first half of the year. And Papo Morales, haven't been able to catch up to Papo the last couple of weeks, so great to finish the first half with him. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Had a couple of good form to win ideas actually at Canterbury, and it was certainly helpful to have it as a reference at a venue where not everybody is familiar, and I thought it was all right.
Yeah,
Star of the North.
The price play was that King of Miami,
yep.
who formed to win, had ranked second. So that was some of the other parts of the sequence were the favorites, but the King of Miami, that definitely spiced some things up. And it wasn't that just put the filter in and press the button, and he was ranked second, so he was definitely usable.
Let's spend the last 3-4 minutes here looking at tomorrow's sequence at Churchill and the Foster, the feature where Maxfield's going to be a very heavy, and I got to go back to my, I'm going to have to reboot it because I brought it up about 20 minutes ago, half an hour ago, and it's been sitting idle, so I got to reboot. So I'll let you lead in and pick some spots at Churchill tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking with the big race of Stephen Foster, I mean, Maxfield was the top horse on form to win. Interesting that Chess Chief was ranked second, and he's a little bit of a price, 12-1. And then Silver Dust was third. You just never know kind of what you're going to get with Silver Dust. He's high strung, it seems, sometimes has some gait issues, and sometimes he just doesn't cooperate. But those were the top three plays on form to win for the Foster. Just backing up on the Wise Dan, I'm only going to go too deep, Write a Comment and Field Pass. They were both dual qualifiers, meaning their average equibase speed figure and their average form to win were both in the top three. So I'll try to squeak by just with those two. And then, the two-year-old races, I'm not going to go into a lot of depth with, limited data set. But I will say, backing up to the War Chant, which is race 7, obviously Starin' in My Dreams and Helium, first-time turf. Use those as you want on pedigree. But the interesting horse here, Steve, is El Kabong.
I'm all low. I love El Kabong.
Was ranked number one on form to win. It was, El Kabong, Royal Prince, and Next were the top three choices. Maybe some prices in the mix there.
I like a forward-going horse like that, and if the algorithm is already identifying El Kabong as a major player, that's very encouraging.
Yeah, it's a great sequence tomorrow night at Churchill, as it always is. I'm definitely looking forward to playing along, and then just to go over the nightcap, the Teffin Stakes, to finish it off, going, you know, a mile on the grass. Nothing too interesting here. I mean, Toby's Heart, Invisible Gal. The horse that was interesting from an underneath standpoint, what is formed to win, identified was Bullseye Beauty, who's 15-1 on the morning line. So maybe in the mix underneath if you're playing the verticals.
I'm also pulling up, since I knew you were already on the mark for Churchill, I'm pulling up Thistledown, and I was curious to see what we've got when it comes to that Ohio Derby with the big, bulky field. And by the way, speaking of, you just mentioned the Teppan, I do see our friend, one of our friends on Twitter, responding about Malloy, and I saying that he didn't think necessarily that she was going to run in the nightcap, which I would be very disappointed. So I just reached out to Wayne Catalano and for a confirmation from Wayno whether she's actually going to go forward. What's interesting? Are you pulling up Thistledown for?
Oh yeah, I've got it. I've got it pulled up, Steve.
Giving us alternate ideas.
Yeah, I just set the filter looking at, you know, races between a mile and a 16th and a mile and an A.
Yeah.
A decent data set there with 5 and 4 starts and 3 starts for most of these horses. And they've got it ranked Keep in Mind, Masquerade, and Hello Hot Rod.
And that's King Fury, King Fury 4th. King, and they've got King Fury. It's got King Fury in the mix too. This is interesting. I thought Keep Me in Mind wasn't going to have enough pace to run at in here. I'll make final decisions for those of you that have not downloaded formtowin.com with the number 2. Form number 2 win. You download it and 2 free races a day, and you'll play around with it as we've been discussing for the last couple of months, and basically a speed evaluation, a algorithm. You can make adjustments, and if you haven't used it yet, use it. And we're going to certainly be keyed up for Del Mar and Saratoga with Form to Win, with more contests and ways to utilize it. And there's also a exciting... kind of not a relaunch, but how close are we, Popo, to the new interface?
The new, probably still 2 or 3 months away, but it's apparently already light years ahead of the current version. So I know we're all super excited about that.
Outstanding. Popo Morales, everybody. Popo Core 1. You can also follow Form to Win as well. Thanks to Popo. Popo, we'll talk in a couple of weeks after vacation. Want to thank Nick Tamaro, of course, and Scully and Hammer and Marty McGee and DeRosa. And earlier, Andy Simoff, Mike McCarthy, and John Kern to pay tribute to Rich Glaser. May his memory live on. And thanks to Casey for a great first half of the year. Thanks to all of you for a great first half of the year. We'll talk to you on July 6th. Lots of good best of stuff the next week, and we'll talk to you when we return. Have a great 4th of July as well. Thanks, everybody.
Lord, there goes Buick 49, like sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul, we don't know. That soul is hard to find. We'll be right back.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horse players, the Southern California Daytime Thoroughbred Racing Circuit is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse for our exciting summer meet. Opening day is Friday, June 25th, and will run through Monday, July 5th. First post is 1 p.m. Pacific, and as always, exciting racing action is ahead. Our opening weekend features the Bertrando Stakes on Saturday, June 26th, followed by a great 4th of July weekend of racing. On Saturday, July 3rd, the Los Alamitos Derby heads the marquee. Past winners of this race include Eclipse Award winners, Accelerate, Shared Belief, Game Winner, and more. On Sunday, July 4th, Los Alamitos will host a live money handicapping contest with two berths to the 2022 NHC up for grabs. And on closing day, Monday, July 5th, the racing action will be headed by the Great Lady M Stakes. Horse players, remember that Los Alamitos features a traditional $2 pick six with a 70-30 split. This summer, exciting daytime thoroughbred racing is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.